Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the All-EN call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the one followed by the four on your telephone. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Thursday, November 7th, 2013. I would now like to turn the conference over to Felix Stumpf. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Kim, and hello, everyone. Sorry for the late start. My name is Felix Stumpf. I'm the Deputy Project Director of the Operations Support Manager project, and I will just very briefly give you a couple updates and then turn it over to Bob Williams. Number one, there's going to be a slide presentation that goes along with the statements from Sally Rhodes. And that slide presentation in PowerPoint form was emailed out to all the employment networks about an hour ago. If you did not receive that email, you can find the slides on our website, yourtickettowork.com. There's a link from the banner on the top about this call today, 503, that will take you to the page. You can also click the information center on the link on the left and then click upcoming events. And there's a link right in the middle of the page, All-EN call, November, whatever today is, the 7th, and you'll find a PowerPoint link there. So in the meantime, go out and grab those slides if you have not already. And also, since this is the first call, we did not have an October All-EN call, so this is the first chance we've gotten together as a group since the most recent portal update, the Secure Provider Portal, which was done on September 27th. So in case you have not seen it, there are some new forms. There was some additional information you can now submit in the payment request form, the certification of services, the universal auto pay request, and there are also some forms you can now sign and print and upload, including the split payment request form and the individual work plan. We've also updated the phone factor system so that that's the tool that as you're logging in, when you key in your password, you receive a call to your phone, and then you answer it and hit a key in order to confirm your identity. We have updated that system so that the message now repeats for a longer period of time, giving you more time on your end once you pick up the receiver, so there's less confusion. And you can now search the EN payment status report by work case number in order to make it easier to follow up on some feedback you've received from our EN payments help desk. I will also note that currently the quarterly beneficiary earnings report is not functional. It will be functional by early next week. That is all for me. I'm now going to turn the call over to Bob Williams, the Associate Commissioner of the Office of Employment Support Programs, Social Security Administration. Bob?
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining today's call. As you know, the major portion of the call will be devoted to providing you with the first of several trainings, webinars, that will offer you information, tips, and resources to how your employment network and the ticket participants who you support can take advantage of key provisions of the new Section 503 rules to help them to find and keep good-paying jobs with federal contractors in their communities. I want to thank the Section 503 Tiger team made up of the From Employment Networks, Maximus, the U.S. Labor Department, and others for designing this training and several others that will follow it over the next several months, as well as for guiding our overall thinking on this front. We are very much indebted to you all. If you have been on other EN calls over the last few months, you have heard me describe the new Section 503 rules that go into effect next April as game changers for workers with disabilities writ large and for ticket participants as well as employment networks specifically. And I believe that to be the case for three primary reasons. The first is that, collectively, about 1 in 5 workers in the country are employed by a business or a non-profit that has a fairly significant contract with the federal government to provide an enormous array of goods and services. My second reason for believing this is that while certain areas like D.C. where I am or the Rock military bases might have a greater concentration of them than others, federal contractors, large and small, are spread out in states and communities all across the country, and we are committed to equipping you and ticket participants with the information and tools you need to identify, get to know and work with, as well as work for those in your area. Finally, the most important reason I believe these rules can be game-changing is this marks the first time that federal contractors or any group of employers will be held accountable for taking specific steps to recruit, hire, and employ workers with disabilities in significant numbers and throughout their organization. I want to be clear. I am not saying that making these rules work for ticket participants will be easy. It will not. It will require hard work on all of our parts, and most especially on the part of ticket participants. I am convinced that together we are very much up to this task, and I hope you find today's training and the other sessions that will take place over the next few months to be informative and useful. Beyond this, I also want to strongly urge you to share any question, idea, or suggestion you might have on this topic with us, because there is much we can learn from each other and together. With that, I would like to turn it back.
Thanks very much, Bob. This is Felix, everyone, and I'll just turn it over to Sally Rhodes.
Thank you, Felix. The purpose of today's training is to provide a brief summary of the new 503 rules to allow individuals representing employment networks to reach a level of comfort with these new requirements, and particularly to explore how employment networks can take advantage of the new employment opportunities for individuals with disabilities resulting from this rule. Associate Commissioner's opening comments did an excellent job, I think, of describing kind of the scope and the excitement that we have here and the expectations that we have to see some real movement in the ticket program as a result of these new rules. The learning objectives for today's training are to identify the types of federal contractors that fall under the 503 rules, to provide a very brief overview of what the new rules require of federal contractors and the organizations that subcontract with them. We're going to explore how EINs can use the new 503 rules to expand the opportunities available for beneficiaries with disabilities to gain and sustain good jobs and careers that can lead to better self-supporting futures. We're also, we have a primary goal today of learning how to locate federal contractors and to research the employment opportunities that they offer in your local area. And finally, we're going to highlight the importance of developing partnerships with existing referral sources such as the American Job Centers and the state vocational rehabilitation agencies. Since the Section 503 rules are administered by the Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs, OFCCP, within the U.S. Department of Labor, I'd like to start with a quote from Tom Perez, the Secretary of Labor. On August the 27th, Secretary Perez said the following comments on the U.S. Department of Labor's official blog. These new rules are a win-win. They will benefit veterans and people with disabilities who belong in the economic mainstream of the nation but have faced unfair barriers in the job market. They will benefit employers who do business with the federal government, increasing their access to a large, diverse pool of qualified workers. And they will benefit the entire nation as these rules help us fulfill the American promise of equal opportunity for all. I want to start with a very quick overview of the types of federal contractors that fall under the rules for Section 503 of the Rehabilitation Act. Federal contractor 503 obligations are really based on the size of the contract and the number of employees. The 503 affirmative action requirements apply to all federal contractors and subcontractors with $10,000 or more in contract awards. federal contractors and the organizations that subcontract with them to complete their federal work must prepare and maintain an affirmative action program if they have $50,000 or more in awards and 50 or more employees. And finally, federal contractors with $100,000 or more in awards since 2003 are also required to post their job openings with an employment service delivery system. The final rules include examples of these employment service delivery systems that may provide assistance to federal contractors in terms of recruiting and developing on-the-job training opportunities. Among those that are in the rules actually listed are American Job Centers, we used to call them one-stop career centers, state vocational rehabilitation agencies, the Department of Veterans Affairs, and employment networks. The fact that employment networks are listed in the rules is noteworthy, as it has the potential to provide a direct link between job opportunities resulting from the new 503 rules and the beneficiaries receiving services from employment networks. The web link on this slide will take you to a summary of the 503 rules. As I said, we're doing a very high-level overview of this information. Next, now I'd like to take a quick look at the new 503 rules and some of the very requirements without going into a lot of detail. The Section 503 requirements prohibit federal contractors from discriminating in employment against individuals with disabilities. There's some feedback here. Can you all hear it? The new rules strengthen the affirmative action provisions of the regulations to help federal contractors in their efforts to recruit, hire, train, promote, and retain individuals with disabilities, and to increase the number of job opportunities available to them. The final rule that was published on September the 24th goes into effect 180 days later, which is March the 24th, 2014. Current federal contractors that already have a written affirmative action program, which was required under the prior rules, if it was in place before the effective date of the new rules, they will have additional time to come into compliance with the new affirmative action program requirements. Again, the link on this page will take you to more information on the 503 rules, particularly with regard to compliance in this case. We're giving you a lot of links throughout this presentation if you want to get additional information. The key changes of interest to employment networks include the fact that the new rules establish a nationwide 7% utilization goal for employing qualified individuals with disabilities. Employers have two options for meeting this 7% goal. They can invite all of their current employees to self-identify as individuals with disabilities. They also can invite applicants to self-identify as individuals with disabilities as part of the interview process. Federal contractors are now required to document and update annually quantitative comparisons of the numbers of individuals with disabilities who apply for jobs and the number that are actually hired. The application of the 7% utilization goal with an employer's workforce will vary depending on the amount of the contract and the size of the contractor or subcontractor's workforce, but it would include positions in upper and middle management, information technology, line workers, support staff, and so on. The goal may be applied to the contractor's entire workforce or to individual classes of employees. Details on exactly how the 7% utilization goal is applied can be found on the OFCCP website and will also be addressed in greater detail during the next training in the series, which should be between now and the end of the year, and it will feature presentation by staff from OFCCP. I also want to note that the 7% utilization goal is not a quota or a ceiling. Federal contractors are expected to move towards this goal and, once obtained, to maintain and hopefully even exceed it. The web link on slide 8 here will take you to the OFCCP website where you can find detailed information on the 503 rules. Now that you have a basic understanding of the new 503 rules, we can talk about the exciting opportunities that these new rules provide for employment networks and the beneficiaries they serve. To give you a feel for the depth and the breadth of the opportunities afforded by the new rules, I want to take just a few minutes to emphasize some relevant data to the conversation. Of the 155,486,000 civilians in the United States workforce as of August 2013, approximately 22%, or an estimated 34 million workers, are employed by over 200,000 federal contractors and subcontractor companies. Nearly $700 billion in federal funds, roughly 14% of the federal budget, was spent on federal contracts in FY 2012. To meet the 7% utilization goal established in the new 503 rules, the U.S. Department of Labor estimates that the federal contractors will need to hire an additional 594,580 individuals with disabilities. The goal of the Office of Employment Support Programs and the Office of Operations Support Manager is to work with ENs over the next few months to get you in a good position to take full advantage of the employment opportunities that are expected to result from the new 503 rules. Let's take just a minute to look at the types of employment opportunities available with federal contractors and their subcontracting organizations. Activities funded under federal contracts include, but by no means are limited to, information technology and website development, research and demonstration projects, training and technical assistance, vehicle maintenance and repair, landscaping, groundskeeping, pruning, guard duty, building security, food services, printing and copying, and that's just to name a few. The important thing to remember is that the Section 503 rules apply to all positions at all training and education levels with a federal contractor company. This includes positions that are not funded under the federal contract. Jobs like these represent excellent opportunities for beneficiaries to secure good-paying jobs with benefits, jobs that will place beneficiaries on the road to good careers and move them towards economic self-support. And that's exactly what the ticket program is about. Now let's spend a few minutes discussing how to locate federal contractors and the employment opportunities offered by these contractors in your geographic area. One way to locate federal contractors is to reach out to one or more of their membership national associations or trade associations that represent the interests of their member organizations. This slide lists four such associations. That's where you can locate federal contractors. The National Industry Liaison Group was formed in 1992 to improve communications between OSCCP and industry liaison groups. It's approximately 61 industry liaison groups are comprised of small, mid-sized, and large federal contractors and employers across the country who have made a commitment to promote affirmative action and equal employment opportunity. Local ILGs are found in every Department of Labor region. You can access information on the website for regional industry liaison groups by visiting the website for the National Industry Liaison Group. The Associated General Contractors of America is the leading association for construction industry. It operates in partnership with its nationwide network of 95 charter chapters. The Professional Services Council is a national trade association of the government professional and technical services industry. Its primary focus is to preserve, improve, and expand the federal government market for its more than 370 member companies. These companies, again, represent small, medium, large businesses that provide federal agencies with all kinds of services, including information technology, engineering, logistics, facilities management, operations and maintenance, environmental services, and that's just to name a few. The association's members employ hundreds of thousands of Americans in all 50 states. If your organization is a federal contractor, you may want to consider joining one or more of these associations. As a member, you would have access to their membership directory. Or you may simply want to reach out to the association to offer your employment network as a resource to their member organizations located in your service delivery area. Research their upcoming conferences, consider exhibiting, or submitting a proposal for a workshop on disability sensitivity and hiring individuals with disabilities. You can always include information on the services your EN offers as part of those topics. You might want to consider partnering with other service providers, such as your local American Job Center or your state vocational rehabilitation agency, in developing a workshop proposal. Another option for locating federal job openings with federal contractors is to use federal data banks and resources. The Federal Procurement Data System Next Generation provides a wealth of information on federal contractors and subcontractors, including details on the procurement activities of more than 60 federal agencies. When you first visit the website, you'll want to review the successful search techniques before you start looking for federal contractors. The search criteria are very sensitive, and you want to use them carefully to narrow your search as much as possible. For example, if you're looking for a food service position in Baltimore, Maryland, you must put quotes around the word food service before you list Baltimore, Maryland. Otherwise, every job that involves food and or services in Baltimore will be listed. Then you will want to narrow your search further by checking the date signed to narrow it down to the newer contracts being listed first. You can further narrow your search by clicking on action obligation to see the amount of the contracts so you can identify which ones fall under the new Section 503 rules. I encourage you to visit the FPDS website and listed here and become familiar with how to use it. The General Services Administration website includes the GSA subcontracting directory that provides information on large prime contractors who've received federal contractors other than construction valued at over $650,000. It also lists large prime contractors who have received federal contracts for construction valued at over $1.5 million. Eligible GSA contractors are listed alphabetically by name within each of the 11 GSA regions. Regional assistance is also available through the 11 regional GSA small business centers. You can visit the website here to learn more about their member organizations. And finally, you'll want to consider registering your EN with OSCCP. Every EN that has demonstrated success in assisting beneficiaries with disabilities to enter and maintain employment should register with the OSCCP's Employment Resource Referral Directory. The ERRD lists governmental and non-governmental not-for-profit organizations as references to promote the hiring of qualified applicants by federal contractors. OSCCP developed this list particularly as a tool to facilitate contractor compliance with the new Section 503 rules. EANs have two options for getting on the ERRD. You can visit the OSCCP website and sign up for the directory. Or, if your EAN has a minimum of 5 ticket assignments and has had at least one payment in the past 12 months, you will receive an invitation from Social Security's Office of Employment Support Programs to be referred to the ERRD directory through a batch process that OESP has set up with OSCCP. The first round of OESP invitations went out via email in September. The 96 EANs that responded have already been forwarded to OSCCP to be put on the ERRD directory in October. The next round of referral invitations will likely be sent out in January. You want to take the time to learn more about the Employer Employment Resource Referral Directory by visiting the section of the OSCCP website listed here on slide 14. Slides 15 and 16 really provide the results of 5 sample searches using the Federal Procurement Data System. This data system, as I mentioned before, is really rich with information. The search features are listed here at the end of each search example. The 2 examples on slide 15 were searches done with specific federal contractors. The first one was a search for landscaping and lawn service contracts awarded to Melwood Horticultural Training Center, an Ability One contractor in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. The contract listed here is through the Department of Army in Fort Meade, Maryland. The contract amount is close to $85 million, and the contract period is for June 2011 to June 2016. That means that it's a 1-year contract with 4 optional years. And here you see the search fit was done by company name, state, Ability One, and by date signed. The second search example here is for computer equipment and support by a company and then by date signed. The company in this case was Dell Computers in Texas. The results listed here are for Dell Federal Systems Limited Partnership in Round Rock, Texas. The contract is through the Environmental Protection Agency, and the contract amount is over $276,000. The contract, which is for an equipment order, is short-term from September to November 2013. The research results you'll find on slide 16 are again from the Federal Procurement Data System by industry type this time. The first search was started with the industry type, aircraft, with filters for Kansas by the date the contract was signed and the action obligation or the contract amount. An example of the results that came up was a military contract order that Cessna Aircraft Company in Wichita, Kansas received from the Department of the Air Force. The contract amount is for over $319 million, and the contract was awarded for June 2013 to July 2014. The second one is search for food service in Florida, filtered by the date the contract was signed and the action obligation or the amount of the contract. This resulted, one of the results that came up, was Lakeview Center in Pensacola, Florida, and it was funded by the Bureau of Public Debt, Air Force Retirement Home in Gulfport, Mississippi. The award amount is for just over $9 million, and the contract dates are October 2013 to October 2014. The final example listed here is the results from a search for security guards in California, with the search refined by the date of the contract was signed. One of the results was Cypress Security, LLC in San Francisco, funded by the Department of Veterans Affairs in Sacramento. The award amount is for over $5 million, and the contract started in October 2013 with an expected completion date of September 2017. Again, a one-year contract with four optional years. If you do happen to know that a company is a federal contractor, through common knowledge or by your search through the Federal Procurement Data System or by contacting one of the associations, national associations, or through the General Services Administration Contracting Directory, your next step is to see if the company has any job openings. You can search the company's job website and look for references to human resources, careers, hiring, recruitment, job openings, things like that. You can also go to your state or local American Job Center and search for job openings in your geographic area. The AJC serving your area can be found by accessing a clickable state map at the DOL website that's listed on slide 17. Another option is to search one of the private sector meta search engines using the company name, and I'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. Now let's talk just a little bit more about using public job search engines. You can access information on job openings by visiting your local American Job Center or by accessing the state's public workforce website, which lists the jobs throughout the state. You can take advantage of the online job seeker resources offered at these centers. You can conduct a search with the company name for current job openings, search by job type, etc. I want to remind you again that under the new 503 rules, all companies that have received $100,000 or more in contracts since 2013 are required to post their job openings with an employment service delivery system such as the AJC system. So slide 19 actually provides you a screenshot of the AJC locator map that I mentioned a minute ago. It's found on the U.S. Department of Labor Employment and Training Administration website. You simply click on your state, and the website will redirect you to the state's workforce website, which will include information on the AJCs in the state. This is probably the easiest way to locate your state workforce system and their network of AJCs if you're not already familiar with them. And that's because each of the state systems tend to go by different names. For example, the state system in Maryland is called the Maryland Workforce Exchange, and in Wisconsin it's called the Wisconsin Job Center. You can also do an affirmative action search using the American Job Center system to see which affirmative action employers are posting jobs with your state or local American Job Center. Enter your state, any state or local AJC as a job seeker or visit their website. You can use their online search tools, do keyword searches to identify affirmative action employers and job openings. For example, you could use the job title or category accountant or accounting, and key skill set words coupled with the terms AA or affirmative action, and define the geographic parameters for your search, such as Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And that will generate a list of the job openings for accountants with employers in the Milwaukee area who have identified themselves as affirmative action employers. If a company's jobs are not listed on the state workforce website, you may want to go directly to the company's website and to alternate job posting sites to search for job openings. The next slide is simply a screenshot of the Job Center of Wisconsin. This shows you that you can search the website there using three features: keyword search, advanced search, and map search. And this shows you, too, that if you do the keyword search, you can further narrow by occupation category, county, and geographic distance. Again, when you look at these in your state, they're all going to look different, but they provide a wealth of information. Now I'm going to get back just for a minute to the private sector meta search engine thing that I mentioned a minute ago. You can do searches by company here. You can look at these and do searches by company, and it's my understanding, too, that employers often come into these, and if you've loaded up resumes on this website, the employers come in and look at some of these websites and search for resumes and reach out to people for jobs. You can use their search tools, and you can search by key occupation again, skill set words, and again, you want to include the terms affirmative action and or equal opportunity employer with geographic parameters. Most of you are probably familiar with some of these. You have Monster.com, Indeed.com, CareerBuilder.com, Dice.com, which is actually specializes in technology jobs, and I know all of you are familiar with LinkedIn.com. Everything we've talked about so far deals with how your EN can use the resources available to identify federal contractors, search for existing contracts, and look for job openings. Now I want to talk briefly about one more option that might be of particular interest to employment networks. That option is developing partnerships with existing referral sources. As noted earlier, EINs are one of the suggested referral sources listed in the new 503 rules. While this is great news, the truth is we think that some of our new EINs are probably the new kids on the block in terms of some of this type of work. When conducting outreach to federal contractors, you will want to determine if they already have established referral sources that have been successful in meeting their needs. If they do, they may not be receptive to developing yet another referral relationship. Why bother if what you have is working? In these situations, you should try to identify who these established referral sources are and reach out to those organizations to discuss the possibility of establishing referral relationships with and through the employer's existing partners. The idea here is to partner with a partner. In many situations, you will find that the beneficiary you are trying to place is a common customer with the employer's existing referral agency. If you do decide to pursue such a partnership, and your EN needs assistance in developing language to use in a partner with a partner agreement, staff at the operations support manager are available to help. Many federal contractors have existing partnerships with their state American Job Center network or their state vocational rehabilitation agency. These service providers often have business service teams with long-standing relationships with local employers. Making your EN services and your candidates known to these established teams is simply smart business. Many EINs already have strong working relationships and established partnerships with their state vocation and local vocational rehabilitation office, but may not have established these types of relationships with the American Job Center Network. EINs can offer AJCs added advantage by providing additional qualified candidates with disabilities for job openings, and for those hired by providing ongoing supports after job placement and stabilization. This is a great opportunity for expanding your EN's business model by adding a component of after placement services for both beneficiaries and employers. In many cases, These existing referral sources will be glad to bring an EN to the table as the expert on post-employment support. And if your EN happens to employ staff that are trained and qualified to provide benefits planning assistance, you will want to highlight this and stress the importance of this type of assistance for beneficiaries who are entering the workforce. That's all on this topic for now. I strongly encourage you to participate in the January 2014 All-EN call, which will delve into this partnering with a partner strategy in greater detail. We're going to have presentations from practitioner ENs that have been successful in implementing this type of model. In the meantime, I hope you will be thinking about how your EN might partner with established referral networks and how those referral networks are going to be an important part of reaching out to and serving federal contractor employers. I strongly encourage you to start planning now to take advantage of the employment opportunities for individuals with disabilities that are expected to emerge as a result of the new 503 rules. Begin by developing expertise and becoming familiar with federal contractor opportunities and the Section 503 requirements. We touched briefly on this today. Plan to attend the series of trainings on the Section 503 rules that AUTHM and OAFP will be conducting. The next training, scheduled for sometime in the next couple months, will feature staff from OSCCP providing very detailed information on the 503 rules and how they apply to federal contractors, including information on what is expected in terms of compliance. Research the federal contractors in your area now. Don't wait until March. Become familiar with the federal contractors in your area and the types of jobs they offer. Remember, the 7% utilization goal applies to the contractors and subcontractors' entire workforce, not just the positions funded under the federal contract. After you've done your research, start reaching out to the federal contractors in your area before March and let them know what you do, who you serve, and what services you offer. Present your EN as a new source of qualified job applicants with disabilities. Reach out to your local American Job Centers and your state vocational rehabilitation agency to discuss how you can partner to meet the needs of federal contractors. It takes time to develop both informal working relationships and formal partnerships. Let them know about the services your EN offers. Offer assistance in identifying resources that will be useful to federal contractors. Discuss establishing a partnership and/or a system for referring qualified beneficiaries, qualified applicants. Start developing marketing materials targeted specifically for federal contractors. You want to have these materials available and begin distributing them well before March. Start creating internal screening processes and training components that can be used to identify qualified beneficiaries and to prepare them to apply for positions with federal contractors. Carefully screening beneficiaries to ensure that your EN is only referring qualified candidates is the key to success here. Employers will remember who sent them qualified candidates. Begin working with pre-selected beneficiaries to build their resumes on the state workforce website. In addition to getting the beneficiary you work with familiar with completing applications online, it will position them to begin applying for jobs through the workforce system as soon as the 503 rules take effect, if not before. Take time now to put things in place to refer qualified beneficiaries for positions with federal contractors. This will give your EN and the beneficiaries you serve a competitive edge when the 503 rules take effect in March. I began with a quote from Secretary of Labor Tom Perez, and I would like to end with another Perez quote. Being a federal contractor is a privilege, one that comes with the reasonable responsibility to abide by the law and provide equal employment opportunity to all workers. Today's new rules make those expectations clearer and more meaningful. We will continue to work with all stakeholders as they implement these changes, promoting opportunity and access for millions of workers across thousands of workplaces. In closing, I'd like to point out several places where you can get more information on the Section 503 rules. You can contact OFCCP directly. You can visit their website, www.dol.gov/OFCCP/. You can call them toll-free at 1-800-397-6251. If you have questions, you can also email OSCCP at osccp-public@dol.gov. And you also have the option of contacting or visiting the OSCCP field office nearest you. You can locate the directory of the OSCCP field offices by going to the link provided here on the PowerPoint. And finally, you can visit the Your Ticket to Work website and use keyword search section 503. As Felix mentioned at the very beginning of the training, this PowerPoint is available on the Your Ticket to Work website. Go to the Information Center and then go to Upcoming Events and go down to the November All-In Call, and you will find the PowerPoint there. Additional resources and materials will be posted to the Your Ticket to Work website as they are identified and developed. And finally, don't forget to attend the monthly Section 503 training series that OASB and AWESOME will be conducting between now and next March. As mentioned earlier, OSCCP has agreed to conduct an in-depth training on the 503 rules in the next month or two. The January All-EN call will be a training featuring EN practitioners talking about the partnering with a partner concept. These are ones that have developed this type of model and have found it successful in placing Social Security beneficiaries with federal contractors. I want to thank you all for taking time from your busy schedules today to participate in this training. I hope we have provided you with enough information to begin developing a strategy to take full advantage of the new employment opportunities expected to result from the new 503 rules. And please feel free to contact AWESOME if you need assistance in thinking through your 503 strategy. I'll turn it back over to you, Felix.
Thank you very much, Sally. And I just want to say that before we go to the open up lines, I'll mention that if any of you care to hear this again or have any colleagues that couldn't join you today, the All-VR call next Tuesday will have the same presentation, and I've gotten word from the chair of that VR call that they'll welcome EN participants as well. If you want to hear this call again or have any of your colleagues dial in. Donna, do we have any questions in the chat that we should address?
We do. Thank you, Felix. We have several, actually. The first
one or two.
The first is, I believe our EN has registered as a referral source on the ERDD. How can I verify as I searched and I don't see our agency?
I would say that because I've looked at, this is Sally, I've looked on the directory and I did see some EN names. Obviously, I think I just gave three or four different ways to contact OSCCP, and I think given that, you might actually want to do the email option.
Okay, so email OSCCP if you are registered but don't see yourself. The other question that has come up in this chat is some employers are asking the job applicant on an online application if they were referred by VR or have a disability without stating that this is a voluntary question. Would you comment?
I would say hold that off for the OSCCP presentation later this year because I think, you know, this is a real game changer because it was not legal in the past to ask those questions, and now it pretty much is. It's voluntary to respond to the question.
Okay. And then we just had one pop in. We are operating as a workforce EN. Our question is, whose responsibility is it to make sure that federal contractors subject to Section 503 post the job through the job centers?
I would say it must be OSCCP. And again, I would hold that for the presentation by them.
These are
compliance issues.
Yeah.
Kim, could we open up the lines for questions from the callers?
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register for a question over the phone, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone keypad. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. Our first question comes from the line of Susan Webb. Please go ahead.
Hi, everybody. I just wanted to respond to that one question about the asking of whether a person has a disability and how that's going to happen. There were some new provisions added to the final rule, and we know that this is a very significant concern to employment networks about disclosing disability. And the final new rules do require specific language be used by employers when they post their jobs in the application process. As far as I know, that language hasn't been posted yet, but it is a requirement that employers do use this verbatim language yet to be developed. So I think you're right, Sally. I think we're going to address that in the next training session, mm-hmm. but I do think it's important for ENs to know that the privacy protections in the new rules are pretty stringent, and in my view, from what we've seen so far, they look pretty good. That was it. That was all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Susan.
Yeah, thanks very much, Susan.
Our next question over the phone lines comes from the line of Sharon Hancock. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sharon.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. Well, this is actually Shonda, and I was asking about self-disclosure for federal employers, those employees who had actually self-disclosed that they do have a disability. Can people who have, or I mean, who do not have disabilities say they have a disability just to meet the requirements? Or do you actually have to have a medically documented disability, or do you have to live your life as though you have a disability? Do you get what I'm saying?
I think I do.
Yeah, the definition of disability is very, very broad. I have to agree with you, and I think this is another good question for OFCCP because it is very, very broad. You could have, some kind of digestive problem, and I think it would qualify.
Unless anybody from OESP cares to comment?
Anybody at OESP? Or Susan Webb?
Well, I think this is Donna. Businesses, when an employee comes in and asks, I don't know.
This is
a really sticky area.
Yeah, they can poll their current employees. Yeah, I would, but I think that because the definition is so broad, I certainly understand where your question is coming from. I will say that.
Yeah, but it probably best if you for the final ruling to wait until we have the OFCCP representative on the call in January.
And you could also again submit it through this email address that was on the OFCCP-public.
I will do is submit these questions to the office now and ask them for responses that we can then share with everyone. What I will do is submit these questions to the office now and ask them for responses that we can then share with everyone.
Thank you, Bob. Hi, everyone. This is Felix. So what I'll say is that at least for a couple more moments, we can certainly take some more questions. But if you have any questions about the particulars or the implications of the OFCCP ruling, we will do just as Bob said, collect them and pass them along, because we aren't really in a position to answer those questions ourselves. And if anybody has any questions about that we can answer, we will do so. But my hunch is that in most cases, we'll be collecting these and then passing them on.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, to register for any questions or comments over the phone, please press 1-4 on your telephone keypad. And there are no further... Oh, I do take that back. We do have a next question from the line of John Duplessis. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, John. Hey, how's it go?
Good.
Okay. I was going to consider that
Unfortunately, Mr. Duplessis' line is just disconnected, and there are no further questions at this time.
All right. We will reach out to him directly. It sounds like he was on speakerphone and then picked up the receiver and disappeared. Unless there are anything else in chat, I think we're ready to go ahead and close the call. Thank you very much to everyone that, as Stella said, everyone that gave their time to listen today. This session will be repeated on the all-VR call on Tuesday, and please do dial in next month and the following. We will have some more information from OFCCP and from providers who are making these kinds of thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines. Have a good day, everyone.